This week on the Barag World Show, we're joined by Larissa Scordato to discuss a lack of knowledge, missed deadlines, and an unwilling project manager. This week's show is sponsored by Full Story and FreshBooks. Welcome to the BOAG World Show, the podcast about user experience, digital strategy, digital management, and everything in between. This week, as always, I'm being joined by Marcus. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Paul. Just got here in time.
Well, you got confused over how to record the podcast. The fact that we've done this, 300 plus times?
You send me a link every time, this time you didn't. So then,
I'm sure I did. Have you got the show notes?
Yes, you sent me the notes, but you didn't send the link.
It's my fault.
You're
it's always
wrong, as ever.
Yeah, because I didn't copy you in on the email that I sent our guest, Larissa. Yes. Hello, Larissa.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you both?
It's a nice sunny afternoon. That's about
it. Do you know, I think after this I might retreat to our nearest beer garden to celebrate the incredibly unproductive day.
Well, the fact that you've got through another day, Paul.
Well, I mean, my problem is it's writing this stupid book. I'm so near the end of the first draft now, and it's like, you know, like when you get so near but so far, and everything becomes an effort and it's a pain.
I've never written a book, but yeah.
Well, it applies to anything big, doesn't it? It's like you go on a car journey and it's always the last, you know, hour that's the tough bit.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, though. I'm not sure I necessarily agree with that. I always find starting things the hardest. Whereas, yeah, there's normally a momentum by the time you're just filling in the gaps at the end. But
okay, so basically you're just saying I'm lazy. That's what's going on here, isn't it? That's what you're implying. Should we talk to Larissa? Because I don't know if I want to talk to
our guest.
Yes. Hello, Larissa.
Hello.
So we've met a couple of times.
Yes, we have.
I believe.
Yeah.
Yes. Good. Phew. Got it right. Yes. But we've never sat down and had really a conversation about what it is that you do. I've worked out you're a digital project manager.
That's right.
But where is it that you work and what is it that you do?
So I have a unique situation. I work for mostly for a company called Fuse, Fuse with a PH.
Oh, okay.
They're a remote digital agency. So people are scattered all over the world. We have people in South Africa and the UK and Canada. And we just added a second person in the United States. So I'm no longer the sole American at the company.
Okay.
It's nice. I can bear the brunt of some of the jokes they want to throw my way.
I mean, there's so little to joke about when it comes to America at the moment, isn't
there? I know, right? It's amazing.
Just nothing to say.
Yeah. It's a little frightening.
So is the company US-based? Well, obviously not, judging by what you just said.
No, UK-based. Canadian-based, yeah. The owner of the company and a couple of our coworkers all live in Toronto.
Ah.
So, yeah, but we're entirely remote, and I'm their only project manager, so I manage all the projects for the company, and it's fun. It's really fun. I get to work out of my kitchen or my basement or my office. And
I'm guessing from that statement, you don't have kids.
I do not.
No. Yeah, that's why it's fun.
Yeah. Right? I have dogs. I have three dogs.
Oh, my word. That's an excessive number of dogs.
Yeah, we have a small zoo in the house.
Which is fair enough.
Dogs are great.
But
they are.
Why are you? Oh, here we go. We're going to have a dog conversation.
I could for about at least an hour. I mean,
tell me about the dogs. What type of dogs are they?
So there's three. There's I'll start with the biggest is Dexter. He's a beagle. Rescue. And then there's Charlie. He's a golden retriever border collie mix that is just the sweetest dog.
That sounds like a good mix.
Yeah,
I like
he just wants to snuggle everybody, unless you take him to the dog park and then he herds, which is hilarious.
That's a very collie-like behavior.
It's really funny. He just gets all the dogs running in circles. And then the smallest one who rules the house is Harley. She's a rat terrier chihuahua mix.
I'm not so sure. That doesn't do it for me.
Oh, she's very snuggly, but she basically owns the other two.
It's the small
person syndrome, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
the smallest is the most aggressive. Yeah.
We have up to five dogs in this house.
What? What do you mean up to five? I thought you only had two.
Do you foster?
No. We have two dogs. We've got a black lab and a kind of like a labradoodle, but he's more than that. But my
low shedding.
And my son and his girlfriend, who live here most of the time, have got two chihuahuas, or one's a mixture. Mm. Again, they're quite difficult. And my daughter's dog just comes around every now and then. He's here at the moment, and he's a puggle, so he's half beagle and half pug.
Does he make an adorable little sound?
He's just lovely, really sweet. Yeah. But it's what you're saying is the Labrador is a big, you know, he's a big brute. His muscles, he's all tall, but he is the bottom of the pile, and he gets picked on, and all the little ones pick on him. It's quite sad.
Yeah, really. That's how our retriever is. He just like lays on his back, and the other two just sort of beat him up, and he loves it.
I think with size comes a kind of I just don't care mentality.
He's not the brightest. That's to be fair about Diesel. He's not a very clever. He's all looks and not much in the way of brains.
We say the same about Charlie. My husband just has recently started posting memes of our dog. Actually, he got a hilarious photo of him the other night, and now there's memes on Facebook with Charlie, and it's appropriate. It's the poor dog.
It's really funny because that's what my wife says about me. All looks and no brains.
Really, Paul?
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely true. No, it's not.
I couldn't possibly comment.
So one of the things that caught my attention when I was looking at your Twitter feed, Larissa, was this. You put about wanderlust.
Yeah.
Are you seriously into traveling? Because yes. I feel I couldn't bond with you over the dog thing, but traveling. Now we're talking.
Yeah, I love traveling. Actually, my husband and I try. We don't really give each other gifts for our birthdays or anything like that. We'd rather just have like an adventure somewhere. So we're both really into travel. And I'm actually flying to England today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Where are you heading? And don't just say London, otherwise you'll have to be punished.
I'm not, actually. I'm real excited. I've been there several times, usually just London. But this time, my very good friend, Rebecca, has a friend of hers who's getting married in Hastings.
Suddenly much more interesting.
Yeah, so we're flying into Heathrow, renting a car, driving to Hastings. Mm-hmm. I'm a little terrified of the drive.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's quite brave for an American to choose to drive in England.
It's time. I've been there several times. I'm going to figure it out.
Okay, so when we hear about a pile-up on the M25, we know what's caused it.
We've been making jokes that we're going to write in the windows, like, we're sorry, we're Americans. that could be so misinterpreted.
The only thing, it could be interpreted in many, many ways.
Yeah.
The big thing you need to, because all Americans, they worry about the roundabouts, but to be honest, once you've done a couple, you're okay. The thing that you'll forget is turning right on a red light. You can't do that over here.
But you can turn left on a red light.
No,
you can't turn it.
Whatever
any
it is, the thing you can do on, it's right on when you're on the right hand side of the. If you're coming up to a junction with traffic lights and you want to turn left, you have to wait for the light.
That works for me. That's very clear.
Okay, good.
So there you go. And obviously, remember. Yeah. Right, get on the right side of the road or the left side of the road.
We're not going to drive in London. When we leave Hastings, we're going to spend a night in Bath.
Ooh, right. Then, lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to spend a couple hours in Bath last time I was in the UK, and it was such a wonderful place. I'm really excited that Rebecca wanted to travel around a bit. So.
Right. I mean, go to Brighton as well, because Brighton's right next to Hastings, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's
it's on the coast as well, right?
Yeah.
We're going to drive when we leave Hastings to go to Bath. We're going to drive the whole southern coast. and then go up through Salisbury.
Okay.
Ah, now Salisbury's my neck of the woods.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I live about half an hour. You may well pass through or around the town I live in, a little town called Blandford.
Nice.
If you're driving up from the coast through Salisbury, then you'll go through Blandford. But now Salisbury, you're going to go to Stonehenge if you're at Salisbury. Yeah, of course. Be prepared to be deeply disappointed.
I've been before.
Oh, have you? Oh, well, there you go.
I've been. She's not been before. So we pre-bought some tickets online, and I mean, she should see it.
You should absolutely see it and then be disappointed.
I love how when they show people at Stonehenge, they always show them, you know, walking amongst the big stones, and then you're actually behind this fence that's like 100 feet away or so, whatever.
And they always photograph it either at sunset or in the fog, or to make it look mysterious, and normally from a very low angle to make the stones look bigger than they actually are.
I remember when I saw it, we were, you know, I think we took a day bus tour or something from London, and we're driving, and I'm like, oh my gosh, we're going to see Stonehenge. And we sort of like came upon this hill and it cleared, and I saw it and I was like, oh.
It is quite impressive how they managed to get rocks that size from Wales.
I agree.
Absolutely. But it's not it's a bit like the Northern Lights, right? Everybody says how amazing the Northern Lights are, but in truth, you know, it's just a bit of a blur in the sky and doesn't look like it does in the photographs because it hasn't got, you know, you're not seeing it in long exposure.
Right.
And
we don't have great lenses in our eyes.
Exactly. So it's been a little bit built out of proportion, I think. But there you go. I'll tell you where it is worth going. Did you go into Salisbury Cathedral when you went last time?
No, I very much want to stop there.
Because it's worth stopping in Salisbury Cathedral because it's got the Magna Carta in. Mm-hmm. And the Magna Carta is the document that your constitution is based upon.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, I would love to do that. My my degree from college is actually in art history. So.
Oh, wow. Then definitely. Yeah.
We'll be spending lots of time in cathedrals and museums and libraries.
Yay.
And luckily my friend is very much excited about that. So.
Otherwise,
I'm like, go have a good time. I'm going to stay here and look at stuff.
I'll apologize for the traffic before you get here, by the way. It's not going to be good this weekend.
And let's apologize for the weather, just on the assumption.
You know what? I always assume that it's going to be chilly. It was the day that I actually went to Stonehenge. We were there, I think it was July, and a cold front came in and it actually dropped to freezing.
What?
In July. So my mom and I are at Stonehenge together, and we're in these very light jackets, freezing to death in these pictures, and it was very windy. And so these two pictures, we just look miserable because we're standing there like clutching each other, freezing, trying to get pictures.
Well, it won't be that bad.
Saturday is a full sunshine, and in American, it's about 71 or 72.
Oh, yeah, that's like Seattle.
Yeah, it should be. I don't imagine it's dissimilar to Seattle, but with more rain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks, I've been looking at the weather. It seems to be pretty similar, maybe a few degrees Fahrenheit colder.
I've suddenly remembered we're doing a podcast. This must be really boring. We're essentially discussing the weather and traffic. That is it. Should we talk about our sponsor and then we'll do some questions and actually be vaguely on topic? That might be a good idea. I know. I could have, you know, that's what we're being not paid for. I don't know. Well, the sponsors, I guess, are paying. They probably wouldn't sponsor the show if it was just about traffic. I'm guessing. I might be wrong. So full story, our first sponsor, I don't imagine them sponsoring a traffic podcast, because what they describe themselves as is a pixel perfect session playback tool. Woo, that sounds fancy. So essentially what they do is they allow you to watch sessions, right? So I have it running on my website on Boag World. So every time you go to my website, I'm watching you. I know it is creepy. Well, it's not really. See, this is the interesting thing about it, because obviously it's all anonymized. You don't know anything, but it's a great way. of me learning about the users and how they're interacting with their website. So I can watch the user sessions back. So it's a tiny little script that captures every click, every swipe, every scroll on your website. And this is the really cool thing. You don't need to add any manual event tagging to it. So in other words, let's say, you in your analytics, you noticed there was some problem with newsletter signups. Now, if it was something like Google Analytics or something like that, you would have to then add event trackers onto the newsletter signup in order to see what's going wrong there. But of course, the problem is that you won't get any historical data. Well, with Full Story, you don't need to add event tracking. So essentially you can select any element, like the newsletter submit button, and you can see anybody that's ever clicked on that. You can watch their sessions, you watch what they do, and it records the full DOM and console logs, which enables you to really easily fix any kind of bugs or problems, because you can see the user, you can see what went wrong. And then, of course, you can search on particular people. So one of my favorite searches is to search on people that rage click, that are so frustrated with my website that they're repeatedly clicking on something. But obviously there aren't many of those because my website's perfect, but it's a useful little indication. I bet you could say, show me all the users that have viewed this post and then gone on to sign up for the newsletter. Really quite powerful stuff. So you can sign up to get Full Story running free on your website for 2 weeks. Give it a good go. But before you sign up for that trial, let's quickly run through the highlights. So you've got even if you've got an Ajax heavy single, page web app type thing, it will work perfectly. So it works with modern frameworks like React or Angular. No problem at all. Full Story will record it all. You can implement Full Story in less than 5 minutes. It really is simply a matter of copying and pasting a bit of JavaScript across onto any page you want to record. That's it forever. Nothing else to do, no event trackers, etc. Every user action and every element on your page is automatically captured without the need to manually tag any of the actions that you want to follow. And because every aspect of the user experience is captured, you can use a Google-like search engine to answer any questions that you have about it. So you can almost input questions into it and it'll give you great advice. It's also got a really simple interface that really anyone can use, including me. So you can immediately jump in and learn something, get some real insights into how people are interacting with your application or your website or whatever. So give it a go. Go to boag.world/try-full-story. So there we go.
That sounds interesting.
It is really good. It's really good.
I feel like American Airlines should put that on their website because I was rage clicking a bit last night when I tried it.
There are so many organizations that need to know quite how bad the experience is. Yeesh.
I almost started a Twitter tweeting at them, and then I was like, no.
Oh, I've done that.
Be the first.
We'll see how it goes in the airport today.
Well, that's what Twitter's for—is ranting uncontrollably about bad experiences.
You're exactly right.
I mean, look at Jared Spool and his ongoing criticism of United Airlines. It's like a constant tirade.
He's right, though. He's sort of right.
Oh, yeah.
I have to fly them later this year to Mexico, and I'm not looking forward to it. But they had the best flight for us, unfortunately, time-wise.
American Airlines aren't too bad.
Yeah. I haven't flown them in a while, so I'm hoping. But the check-in process on their website was a little bit less than par.
Yeah, the trouble is, working in the industry that we do, you're like super aware of those kinds of things, aren't you? It just drives you nuts.
Yeah, sometimes I wish that I could open an incognito window in my brain and be someone who's not one of us, because I'm so hypercritical. I want to know what people really get upset about versus what I get upset about.
Well, that's a very good point.
I'm having I'm reminded again at the moment because I'm of the irony in being hired by a company to do UX work and then being sent to their purchasing system to log in and to kind of register as one of their new suppliers. And this one's just completely unusable. And they even warned me that it may take a few weeks for us to get you on the system.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can't go back to where, you can't save anything. And the links that where you were, when you were kind of like filling stuff in, whenever you finish something, you save it and you move on to the next point. The link that you're arrived at to that new page doesn't work the next time you go to it.
Oh, it's just insane.
But yes, there's a definite irony there. But we're not being hired. We're never being hired to sort this mess out. And it's like,
no.
Well, maybe we should be.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've got to say, enterprise systems, the kind of back-end systems that they use, they're always shockingly bad because I think management focus on, bring in new sales, increase profit. But they don't think about the cost savings benefits that user experience can bring, you know, and it's a huge area.
Like, think about how much extra time people that work in purchasing could spend on other things if they're not constantly unplugging somebody from the system and like debugging issues that they're having.
I mean, I think it was Chris once that did a presentation, Chris Scott, RMD, who did a presentation where he calculated, the number of employees that they had. I think it was something like booking holiday off or something like that. I can't remember, or expenses. And he calculated the number of employees that they had and saving them 1 minute each on completing a task. And how much, based on the average salary, how much that would, cost the organization. And it was phenomenal. Yeah. It's absolutely phenomenal. And of course, there's always that. Do you know that famous story about Steve Jobs with the first Macintosh? So he said he was complaining about the fact that it was taking too long to boot up. Right. Mm-hmm. And the engineer was saying, well, we can't, there's nothing we can do. We can't spend time on this. Da, 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 da. And Steve Jobs said, no, you've got to take off 10 seconds from the boot time. And the engineer said, well, 10 seconds, that doesn't really matter that much. 10 seconds. And then, he started calculating it. Steve Jobs, 10 seconds booting up so many times, a week times the 2 million people using it. Actually costs several, a lot of lifetimes. So basically, by having this Mac booting up slowly, you're killing people. I just think that's such a great way of thinking about it. You're costing lives.
You're killing people.
Well, that's kind of how I felt earlier. Like I was.
Yeah. And it does feel like that. It feels like death by a thousand cuts, doesn't it? These kinds of things.
Sort of. Yeah, my husband has to use a regular laptop for work. Mm-hmm. He's a content strategist, so he doesn't have a fancy MacBook for work yet.
Okay.
Turning it on takes like a year. it's and when he started there and they gave him this thing, he was like, I honestly didn't remember how to use this.
Yeah. I wouldn't remember how to use one.
Yeah, I tried to get on it to like just quickly browse in something and no.
I have to support my son's PC, my Windows PC.
Yeah.
And it's the only Windows machine in the entire house, and it takes more effort to support that one machine than all of the Macs combined.
Yeah, it's really just crazy to me.
Anyway, we'll get hate mail. Yeah, we'll get hate mail from the PC lovers. Anyway, should we do a question?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So our first question is from Matthew, and he says, how do you deal with teams, and I also added clients, that have a fundamental lack of knowledge of modern programming practices where their mindset is stuck in the, well, we've always done it this way, and the team manager ignores requests for training? So it's that kind of stuck in the past attitude. Mm-hmm. I mean, Larissa, you must have come across clients that are like this.
I have.
So how did you cope with it?
So we had a client, not at my current agency, at my last agency. We worked with a very large software client. They put out a type of software, and their website was pretty dated, and they wanted to redesign their website. So we went into discovery with them, and we come to find out that their current website for this entire, this global company was handled by basically one developer who built this proprietary CMS system, and it had gotten to a point where it just, it wasn't very flexible for people to be able to update. You know, people couldn't really get in there. It was very much dependent on him. So if, God forbid, something happened to him, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody would be able to change the website if the website crashed and he was sick. I mean, it was not a good situation. So, but it was really hard because we had to work together with him. And then they had like a couple other, you know, developers in the company and whatnot. So we had to work together in order to do this, because after we build the site, you know, they were going to be maintaining it long term. Mm. But we found that it worked really well for us to, first of all, have him do a complete walkthrough of their whole website. So we brought in our development team and our designers and myself, and we sat down at a conference table, and he walked us through the entire back end of their system that he built, which was really, I mean, it really was a spectacular system. I mean, that he built from the ground. It just was kind of dated and not flexible for the whole company. So we had him do that. And then we were just very clear with the team there, just to say, you know what, like, we're not trying to come in here and like take your job. We're not trying to come in here and, you know, say anything negative, but at the same time, like, you have this global company and you've got global salespeople that are trying to get into this website and throw up splash pages or whatever that they're sending people to check out product listings, and they're not able to do it. You know, so you're basically running 24/7, you know, customer support with your salespeople. And that's just, you know, it's kind of unrealistic for you to be dealing with it that way too. And so it kind of let him realize that we were on his side and trying to make his life easier, because he would be, you know, he'd be woken up at crazy hours of the night with like a request from somebody on the other side of the world to change something, or that they're stuck and they can't get, you know, their major new client in Japan to view this splash page with all this product stuff on it. So, it was rough, but I think like by the end, it ended up being a pretty good working relationship.
I think that that thing of making it clear that you're there to help them, because I think there are very few programmers or developers that want to be stuck doing maintenance. They want to do the cool new stuff, and they don't get to do that if they're supporting some legacy system that's horribly out of date. But I think the other part of this is that team manager ignoring requests for training part of it that struck me. And it reminded me of one of the things that, we have done at Headscape in the past, which is that it's very easy, isn't it, when you get an external agency in, that they, you know, they kind of just take over and they build the website and then they hand it back to the development team. But more and more, we're kind of embedding ourselves in teams. Have you ever done anything like that and actually work side by side to develop stuff?
Yeah, we're doing that right now on a site that is launching this week. We have our client, and then we have, they work with like a proprietary like company that built an API for their system, because they have customer service people that deal with this and people register for stuff on their website. So we've been working side by side with the company that built the API for them as sort of their development team. And we've had their, you know, we check in with them constantly. So we're constantly chatting on the phone and walking through processes and doing testing with them. And it's really, I feel like it makes a project so much more successful when you're able to do that. Other than like, you know, like you were saying, like, an external agency comes in, they become they. It's like, oh, they did this. And it's like, no, we did this. Like, we've built this together.
And we've even gone as far as doing like pair programming of taking one of our, you know, programmers that have got, you know, experience in best practice, et cetera, and pairing them with one of their internal developers, like the guy you were talking with, and them actually code it hand in hand, because then effectively you're training that other developer up at the same time as building what, you know, whatever it is that you're building. So it's kind of two birds. It's training by stealth, is, you know?
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
We've got another project we're working on right now, where the client that we're working with, we're working together for one of their clients and building a website.
Right. Yeah.
So they did design. We came in and did front-end development. And then they have this like interactive map feature that we did a React app for that's getting embedded. And now they're integrating all of our development into a CMS for their client. And so we've been doing this sort of back and forth integration and, oh, maybe we should make an adjustment here. And, you know, it's just makes it a little bit more of a partnership.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work fine. I really recently I've just, well, like, did I mess up? I don't know. So anyway, I went into a company, was asked to help with their digital strategy, and they had a internal development team, an IT team, that consisted of, well, 3 full-time employees and a contractor. And I discovered, you know, as I dug around, that everything was proprietary built by this team. Nobody else understood it, very much like the scenario that you just described. Even to the point that they were hosting the website and all of the systems internally in the building. They had a physical service running in the building, you know, really like 1999, you know?
Yeah.
And so I kind of worked with them to understand what they had, et cetera, et cetera. And then I recommended that they build, this organization needed a more robust digital team. They needed to appoint a digital lead, that these guys needed internal training, da, 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 da. And management entirely bought on with all of this. And so they advertised for the digital lead, and then their entire IT team resigned and left. They just couldn't cope with the change. And so from being entirely reliant on this IT team to run this infrastructure that they'd built internally and that only they understood, and then they've all just suddenly left. And it's like, oh my word.
That's a nightmare.
It's awful. It's
a nightmare scenario.
So, you know, I think in the long term, it'll be good, because I think getting those people on board, getting them up to speed would have been a huge challenge. But in the short term, it's like, oh, crap, I've just made everybody leave and there's nobody to support the website. Fortunately, I've managed to save the problem using an external agency that's going to come in and help sort things out. And they're doing the same thing you talked about in your example, which is that they're starting by doing an audit. You know, what is there? How is it all set up? Let's understand what's there.
Yeah. I think that's so valuable in what we do. I mean, when we go into a website, like a redesign, not a new product, obviously, but a redesign, like it makes sense to really become an expert in the old product, the old website, because then you know the pain points, like in and out yourself.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So no doubt that amuses you, Marcus. I've managed to cock things up.
I'm just wondering how you're feeling about that, Paul.
I've kind of got very mixed feelings about it, because, you know, on one hand, obviously I didn't want those people to go until we had something else in place. But on another hand, you know, and ideally I didn't want them to go at all, because, you know, continuity and all the rest of it, I'd much prefer that they got up to speed. But on the other hand, you know, if they were that unwilling to change, if they were that unwilling to, you know, accept that the situation was changing around them, then it's probably best that they went.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? You know?
Maybe not quite.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, not all at once and not that quickly, yeah.
Mm. I mean if you were sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, actually, the contractor guy is staying around, so there will be some continuity.
Oh, that's good.
But it's still not ideal, is it?
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to work in technology nowadays and you're not okay with change, I mean, you're sort of shooting yourself, right? I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Like those things don't work together. I mean, especially like, you know, I feel like every project I hear some new tech stack or something, there's some sort of analogy or product or something. And I'm like, wait, what is that?
Well, I have a confession to make, which is that you mentioned something, and also I confidently mentioned something in the sponsor section, which I've never heard of, which is React.
Yeah.
What's React?
So React is, it's sort of like a, I'm going to mess it up. My developers are going to make fun of me.
Yeah, this is the trouble, isn't it? We're all on really dangerous ground right now.
Yeah, we really are.
There are developers listening to this sniggering right now.
I know. They're like, oh, listen to the project manager try and explain this.
God, I don't dare you to come up with a description of React.
I would say, I mean, it's a framework for creating an app. So for creating some sort of functionality that helps things to...
Is this the Facebook one from the looks of it, or have I found something different? I typed in React and it's facebook.github.io.
Yeah.
A painless way of creating interactive user interfaces.
Yeah. So like, for example, the thing that we're building is like a map feature for different places that you can go. Like fishing and camping around Ontario, Canada. And it's a really neat feature because it's this interactive map where, like, as you hover over the map, you can see properties and you can, like, hover and have things come up and you can click into them and stuff like that. So it allows you to create, like, a frame. It's like a framework that basically allows you to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But you can use it for lots of different things. Like, I know we're using it on we've used it on a couple other projects as well, so...
See, there you go. I'm totally out of date.
Developers seem to favor it over Angular, which I know would be a whole developer argument back and forth, I'm sure.
There's now going to, that's it, war in the comments.
It'll be like celebrity deathmatch, Angular versus React. Let's see what we get.
Marcus, you were going to say something profound.
Yeah, not that profound, but well, just kind of, as I think we've said, we've had questions like this kind of throughout this series, and... Really, my response to Matthew is you need to show what the right thing is to your manager and to the rest of your team. And if you don't get anywhere, leave. And I think that's basically been our advice along the way. If you're in an environment that's so caustic that it's not willing to change and doesn't want to hear what good advice or best practice is, then you're better off out.
Do you know, that's exactly, I've got a post that will have come out by the time this is released. And it basically, it's actually a sponsored post, right? It's a post by a recruitment agency. But what I found, but actually the post that I've written, it's really interesting. The way this recruitment agency is working is saying that people like us are so in demand, right? That essentially they will pay you $2,000 if you accept a job via them, right? Mm-hmm. And there's all these other kind of great benefits that come with using this recruitment agency. But what that led me to do is write a post that essentially just said what you've just said, Marcus. Mm. You know, that just don't put up with that kind of shit. You know, if they won't change, go elsewhere. There's no shortage of opportunities.
Exactly.
It's absolutely true.
Yeah, that's how I found myself at Fuse.
Oh, is it really? You threw a strop one day and left?
Well, not quite like that, though I did fantasize about it a little bit. I just, you know, the place I used to work for, I mean, they do really wonderful work, and there's some fantastic people that work there. But it's just, you know, it's a very large digital agency. They also do traditional advertising as well.
Right.
I'm just not into advertising so much.
No.
I'm more interested in like product design and app design. I mean, we build websites at Fuse as well, but like I like to work on stuff that it, you know, maybe provides a service to somebody or a benefit or does something good for humanity.
Oh, now see, that's just overly ambitious.
Do you know
that the kind of projects I really like are the ones the ones that pay me a lot of money. Yeah, they're the best.
There are those.
I saw
too.
That one coming, Paul.
But you want to be able to sleep at night, you know?
Well, no, I don't have a problem with that. Drugs, because if you earn a lot of money, you can take a lot of drugs, and then you sleep well.
So, did you build Donald Trump's new website then?
Oh yeah, I would. Yeah, quite happily.
I wouldn't
quite
be
happily.
Able to do that.
Oh no, I couldn't. There are limits, aren't there?
Yeah.
I've worked on sex toy sites. I've worked on a site for a chicken incinerator plant.
I have a friend who's working on a sex toy site.
Yeah, actually, it's quite an interesting challenge.
It's sort of fascinating.
It is fascinating, absolutely. So yeah, all of those, absolutely fine. Working on Donald Trump's site is the line I draw. Mm. There you go. So we do next question.
Yeah.
Okay. There's far too much waffle, even by our standard, in this show so far. I blame Marcus. Because he talks so much on the show, you can't get a word in edgeways.
Yeah.
I bring reason to the show, mostly, sometimes.
Okay. So the next question is from Ross. No matter how good your team that's a terribly written question.
No matter how, comma right there.
How good your team, comma, things sometimes go wrong and deadlines get missed. How should you deal with these kinds of issues to minimize the impact on the project and on the reputation of your team? That's it's a really good question, just poorly written.
Yeah.
So go on then, Larissa, solve that one for us. Give us the definitive answer.
Well, I don't ever miss deadlines. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, of course, yes.
I mean, deadlines they fly by all the time, right?
Yes.
Yeah, like the Douglas Adams quote. I love deadlines. I love the whooshing noise they make as they go by.
Yeah. I chuckled a lot when I read that. Because it's true. I mean, you know, we're going to miss deadlines. We're building really like large interactive products in different tech stacks that, I mean, there's all kinds of weird things you can't predict. So
absolutely.
It's funny. I think Dave Pryor likes to say that we're trying to manage things that you can't predict our jobs at all, but we're trying to. So being a project manager is sort of like banging your head against a wall sometime.
Yep.
Can be.
But I think that's kind of the fun part of it. Mm-hmm. For me, I think, you know, as soon as I can realize that a milestone is going to be missed, the first thing I do is I go to my team and just make sure that we have, okay, we're going to miss this, but overall, what's the impact to the whole project? Is there an impact to the budget? Can we make this up? You know, and kind of like figure out a strategy and a solution to missing this deadline, and then just go right to the client and own up to it.
Yeah. That's what it comes down to, isn't it? It's about going back to the client as soon as possible and making them aware. I sometimes even say I would prefer, because the gray area is where you think you might miss a deadline, but you're not sure. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you think, oh, well, perhaps we can make it up. I'm a great believer in warning the client that you might miss it anyway and then exceeding expectations.
Totally. Yeah, I love doing that.
Yeah, because it makes you look, you know, incredible.
Well, it also helps your client trust you more, too, because they know that you're willing to talk to them about difficult situations.
Mm.
Like, you know, it's not all sunshine and roses. Like, it's hard what we do. And, you know, I think that if you're properly setting expectations from the beginning and if you're really making sure that you talk to your client as often as you should, like we like to do biweekly check-ins if we could. So I'm talking to most of our clients twice a week. Whether it's just a chat over Skype or an actual conversation. I mean, if they're that involved in the project from the beginning, it's a lot easier because sometimes they'll even see it too, because they'll be like, oh, you know what? I asked for that feature to be changed a little bit. What's that going to do to the deadline?
Yeah.
And that's the best situation to be in, because then that's easy. That one's easy.
Yeah. The more embedded they are in the project, the more of a sense of ownership they have over it and the more responsibility they take for it. So.
Totally.
Mm. One of the things I've kind of found over the years is that many projects slip because, and I'm not pointing fingers here, but not because of the agency's fault, because of the client's fault. They, you know, they weren't expecting that organizing stakeholder interviews, let's say, would take a month. They thought it might take a week. For example, and what I found is
stakeholder interviews always take forever.
They do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But so you've kind of almost got to allow for that. It's like if what I'm trying to say here is if we took on all the work we do, I'm talking about Headscape now, and it went exactly as the original timelines went, then we wouldn't be able to do all the work. But you kind of know that some things are going to take longer than they will. And that's the hard part of managing projects and managing who's working on what at the time. I have no answer for that. It was more of just an observation. But it just seems that every project slips a bit, and it's quite often nothing to do with us. And dealing with that's hard.
Is that also... that's a thing you can only learn with experience. Because, you know, when you first engage with the client right at the beginning before they sign up for everything, you can get a pretty good sense of whether their project is going to be one that slips from their side. Because, you know, the type of organization or even the personality of the client and all of those kinds of things. But it's only when you've been doing it for 20 odd years, you know, that you begin to notice those kinds of things. Well, yeah. Not 20 years, but, you know.
Just start to recognize patterns.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I know if I have an enterprise client that has, you know, 5 project stakeholders in 3 different cities and, you know, 3 different time zones. I would probably plan for a little extra time for feedback and for meeting scheduling and for, you know, requirements gathering.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, somebody who's local and doing a startup and has all the time in the world to, you know, partner with you and show up for in-person meetings and stuff. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's
what we don't do any of those. That's why I guess all our clients are more like the former.
Yeah, which is why you can plan and make the presumption that something will slip somewhere. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the basic answer to Ross's question is just communicate often.
Yeah.
Both when things are going well and as soon as you think things might not be going well.
Mm. Yeah.
Easy peasy. Let's do the last question from Sander.
Okay.
Sander says, now, this was part of a longer email, so I'll read the question bit of it and then I'll give you a bit of background. Do you have some tips for junior developers who are forced into PM roles but also need to code and get the job done? So this is Sander basically saying, well, we don't have dedicated project managers. Yeah, I know. And I'm kind of expected to kind of do development and to run a project at the same time. You know, and so what happens is that you get into this scenario, or I got the impression from him that you get into this scenario where you're constantly being interrupted with project management type stuff when you're trying to focus on coding, which is impossibly difficult.
Yeah.
This might be one of Marcus's kind of, well, just leave and go somewhere else.
I was going to say, see my previous response. No, that's not, it might be a great team. They might be new. There might only be 2 of them. You know,
yeah.
He might have to do sales as well.
Yeah. So, Larissa, have you ever kind of been in this kind of situation? You got any tips for him?
Well, I've been fortunate to work for companies that have project managers. But, I mean, I know, like, for my current company, I'm about to be in England for, you know, 8 or 9 days. So my developers are going to be kind of running lead on some projects and whatnot. I think the biggest thing to do, especially for people that are coding, is to set boundaries.
Yeah.
And be okay with telling people, like, hey, I can't manage this right now. Uh-huh. I need to spend the next 4 hours coding because I've got to get this done. And literally, I mean, depending on what type of communication tools you use, like even me, when I go heads down to write a project plan or, you know, something like if I'm doing some sort of like, you know, intense budget thing or whatever, where I really need to concentrate, I sign out of Slack. I put my phone on silent. Like I do everything I can to minimize those interruptions. If you're in an actual office, something that we started implementing at my last office is that, you know, we had little cards at our desks. So we had like red cards and green cards and yellow cards to basically say, like, if the red card is up, don't talk to me unless the building's on fire. You know?
Well, hopefully you'd kind of notice that.
Yeah, well, you'd hope so. But, you know, sometimes developers get into the zone. But yeah, I mean, set boundaries and just, you know, it's okay. Like, I mean, more than likely we're not, you know, things can wait a few hours so that you can actually finish something on the project and then check your email and go through that stuff.
I think it's good to let people know when they can expect a response. So for example, when I used to put the little cards up on my desk saying, go away, you know, I would normally say, you know, come back at 3 or you know, something like that. And equally, you know, with email, there was somebody I emailed recently who I automatically got a out of office notification, automatic reply from them that essentially said, I only check emails 3 times a day, first thing in the morning, lunchtime and in the evening. So if it's a few hours before I reply, be assured that I will reply when I next check email. You know, so you just kind of know where you stand then, don't you, if you're on the other end of that experience?
Yeah, if I've got a client with a very urgent request, but I'm trying to get something done, and I know that the urgent request isn't necessarily something that, like, they need right now, but they just want me to answer a question, I usually will shoot them a note right back and say, hey, you know, I'm in the middle of something here, but I will respond to you in 2 hours.
So you still have your email open then?
Yeah, I tend to do that. Although I've been, now that I have a dedicated office space in my house, I've set it up so that I've got like a certain window with my email on one monitor, and I'll shut the monitor off if I have to go heads down on something. So I'll just turn the monitor off, work on something. I don't have any sort of like sounds or anything that play when I get an email, 'cause I would go insane. I don't like notifications.
No,
as a project manager, I think that's understandable. But yeah, so I just, you know, I'll turn my computer screen off and work in another screen and then come back to it.
It might be helpful. Sorry, Marcus.
I was going to say, all I say if I'm going to shut everything off is, if you really need me, pick up the phone. Because I won't turn that off, but everything else gets shut down. And I think, in answer to Sandra's question, is make sure, don't deal with the project management stuff all the time.
What I was about to say is, you know, have designated times, you know, at the beginning of the day, the end of the day, or yeah, every other day or whatever, where you do that kind of stuff. It's what Larissa said, isn't it? About setting boundaries. We're just saying the same thing in different ways. We're getting dull now. Yeah. I'm boring myself.
My first agency that I worked for, we used to have a thing called maker time because we were all in a big room together. So I was the only project manager there. And then we had, you know, our CEO and our ops manager and then all our designers and content strategists in the same room all together. And so it could get loud in there if, you know, say I was chatting with the CEO about a project. So we actually dedicated certain calendar blocks. I think it was Monday afternoons, Tuesday and Thursday mornings, and then Wednesday afternoons as well. Like, those were maker time, which was basically like, this is quiet time. So if I had to do phone calls or whatever, I would go into another room in the office. That way they had their dedicated time and I really wouldn't bug them unless, I tended not to at all. Unless, I mean, it was a real emergency, but...
It sounds very much like, you know, having kids. You know, you say to them, look, it's quiet time now. Everybody lie down on the mat and be quiet.
Seriously.
Well, yeah, it's true. I tell you, you know, sometimes my wife works, because I've worked from home for years, and sometimes my wife works in the office with me, and it drives me nuts. I can't do stuff because, like, she talks. And, you know, and it's not to me necessarily, but it's on the phone or whatever else. And it's really hard to, I find it really hard to concentrate on stuff when other people are making noise.
We had that when my husband and I moved to Seattle in March. He worked from home because the agency that he worked for in Phoenix allowed him to move and stay working with them remote while he worked for a job. So he was home for like 3.5 months. And I was downstairs in the basement and he was upstairs, but we're renting a very historic home. So you can hear people walking around and I could hear his conversations clear as the bell. And, for the first few weeks, it really drove me crazy.
It's noise canceling headphones save my life. Yeah.
They're amazing.
It's funny though, isn't it? Cause if I'm in my home office at the moment, totally silent. I don't have music on because I can't write, which is what I mostly do. Well, this is what I say anyway. I say that I don't have music on because I can't concentrate on my writing. Yeah, I go to the office and there's music on all the time. People are having like three different conversations and I just carry on. So
there's a level, I think. I think, like, you know, no noise and a lot of overlapping noise is fine, because with a lot of overlapping noise, it becomes background noise. Mm. It's like I can go and sit and work in a coffee shop where there's lots of people talking and there's background music on as well. But if there's just one conversation going on,
you have to listen to it.
You end up listening to that conversation.
It's also your space too. You know, the home office is sort of your space. So you're very used to the environment that you've created for yourself. Mm. And so when there's a change to that environment, you're hyper aware of it versus when you go into the office or you go into a coffee shop, you're expecting that white noise.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've also discovered with the music thing is, if I choose the music, then I listen to it. If somebody else does, I can ignore it. And it's usually Dan. I don't like it, but it's just on the
I can't listen to music with words.
No, I can't either.
I have to listen to, I usually listen to classical or jazz or something if I'm listening to music at home.
Movie scores for me.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's a great idea.
I went to see Star Trek Beyond yesterday, so I thought I'd put on the Star Trek music today.
Nice.
And now it's just stuck in my head. It's driving me around a twist. Da, 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 yeah. Da, da. Yeah. Anyway.
My husband's been whistling the Star Trek TV show theme recently in the house.
Yeah, even better.
And then it gets stuck in my head for days. And I'm like, what am I thinking of? And then I realize it's Joel walking around the house whistling Star Trek.
You've been corrupted.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've gone off topic again. I like these. I like these more kind of, you know, wandering episodes. Not everybody does, but I enjoy it. So let's talk about our second sponsor, which is FreshBooks. FreshBooks have created a super intuitive tool that makes it really easy to send invoices to clients, which is always good because, let's face it, that's the one bit of our job that we don't want to do. I like getting paid. I don't like doing the admin to get paid. So using FreshBooks, it only takes about 30 seconds to create and send an invoice. You can customize it with your own logo, your own color schemes, all that kind of stuff, so that the invoice reflects your branding. Your clients can pay you online, which can seriously improve how quickly you get paid in many cases. And they can show, FreshBooks will show you whether or not those clients have actually looked at the invoices that you've emailed them. So they can't go, oh, I didn't get the invoice, or, you know, whatever else. You know exactly what's going on, which is so invaluable. I absolutely love that. FreshBooks can send late payment reminders for you, so you don't have to chase your clients. It's done automatically, which again saves a lot of time. Because, you know, we don't get paid for admin, so the more we can automate it, the better. You can also use FreshBooks deposits feature, which streamlines how you invoice your money up front. You know, so when you want to invoice up front a deposit on a project, it streamlines the whole of that process when you're kicking off a project. So it's all about invoicing, but they do have other great features as well. They have a really good expenses feature for tracking your expenses, making that really easy. No box full of receipts anymore. I hate that. I hate dealing with blooming receipts. And then they've got a really good mobile app as well that lets you take pictures of your receipts and organize them for later, and create expenses reports and all the kinds of things you need for claiming tax back and that kind of stuff. FreshBooks are offering a month of unrestricted use to all of our listeners, totally free right now. You don't need a credit card, which I was ranting on about last week about how annoying it is when they make you give your credit card. To claim that free month of unrestricted trial, go to freshbooks.com/BoagWorld and enter Boag World UX Show in the How Did You Hear About Us section so that they know how awesome it is to advertise with us. Really appreciate their support for the show, and please check out our sponsors. As always, Marcus, joke time.
Yes. Thanks to the people who responded to my I Need More Jokes on the Boag World Slack chat channel.
Yeah, some good ones in there.
Yeah, well, but the last one about the Vikings, I don't get. I think that's...
No, I feel like he missed a fundamental part of the joke at some point.
Yes. So
yeah.
Please, whoever, Bob, Salmon, please... re-edit your joke so I can tell it, maybe. But this one is...
Or explain it.
Yeah, just what's going on. Anyway, this is from Jason Foss. Starts off with a note that Coles, the name Coles, is a supermarket chain in Australia. Okay?
Ah, okay.
Yesterday, I went to Coles to buy cabbage. There's a new law that if you buy cabbage from Coles, you're legally required to purchase carrots and mayonnaise as well. Coles law.
Oh, that is terrible.
Oh, no. Oh, my husband and my boss would love that joke.
There you go.
So they will laugh.
That is a perfect joke for this show.
It's like a dad joke.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We only do dad jokes here.
Yep.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So thank you, Larissa, for coming on the show. Really appreciate you joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, really good. So where can people find out more about you and what you do and that kind of thing?
So, I mean, you can check out the company website if you want. It's just Fuse, FUSE.ca. That's the team I work with. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you can find me on Twitter. I'm just @LarissaScordato. I try to tweet a little bit about project management mostly, though recently I've been a little bit enraged with American political things, but that'll be over in November, hopefully.
But you'll be moving to Canada, won't you?
Right. That's actually the joke. My boss is like, so when you move to Canada, I'm like, yeah, thanks.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's inevitable at this point, I think. I think you're all doomed. I think the whole world is doomed. I don't think moving to Canada is going to be far enough.
You know, I feel like 2016 is on an interesting road. We'll see what happens. I'm a little frightened.
I'm thinking about signing up to that thing that allows that helps to colonize Mars. Have you heard about this?
I haven't, no.
Yeah, so there's this some private venture that is looking for couples, ideally, to move, you know, to go to Mars for the long term.
Not old couples like you, Paul.
No, young people like Larissa. Yeah. She's young.
Yeah.
All right. So just move to Mars. Even Trump can't get you there.
Yeah.
It's living on Mars.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, absolutely.
It could be interesting.
I think it's the way to go.
Yeah.
Whole planet to yourself.
Hot, extreme cold. I mean, I used to live in the desert, so I'm kind of used to that.
There you go. See, it's all fine. So, thank you, Larissa, for joining us next week. So it's the final show of this season. Ooh. And what we're going to do is we're going to do a little bit of a test run for what I think I'm going to try next season, which is that we're going to try a new round table format. So instead of just having one guest like we've done this week, we're going to have three whole guests.
Oh.
Three for the price of one. Can you imagine how chaotic that's going to be?
Mm-hmm.
That's fun. I've done a few podcasts like that where it's like a panel discussion. I did one for Louder Than 10, and then I just did one for the Drunken PM.
See, I thought this was a new format, but apparently everybody's done it before then. Great.
It's fun. Lots of tangents.
Oh, I can imagine.
Shocker.
I think our podcast might double in length.
Yeah.
Or triple in length as there's three guests. So, yes. Marcus, you're a bit unsure about this idea, aren't you?
I think as long as each of us have got something to kind of cover, like you're going to talk about that and you're going to talk about that, then I think then it can work. But if it's just like free for all, then it'll be just you talking, Paul.
Planning's not my strong suit, really. I'm not a project manager. That's my excuse. So, but there are three other project managers going to be on the show next week. So hopefully one of them will take control.
Brad.
So we've got Brett, Sam, and Holly.
Oh, that's going to be such a delightful conversation.
Marcus, you're flashing your, sticking your hand up.
I'm having fun raising my hand.
Because we're going to need to do that next week.
Yes.
People are going to need to ask permission to speak.
Can I speak now? I don't want to.
I like that feature.
Yeah.
That's going to be a great conversation. Those three are fantastic people.
Absolutely. It's going to be really good. So join us next week. Thank you for listening and goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.